hope you enjoy this message from St. Martin C3, a location of C3 Church, Christchurch.
I can't think of a crisis in our lifetime on the global scale of COVID-19. It is amazing, isn't it, how wide-ranging it is and how much of the world's population is now living differently because of this pandemic. And the question that a number of people have asked me as we've journeyed over the last couple of months is, well, where is God in all of this? Or, you know, is he there? Is he doing anything? Is he saying anything? And certainly we know this from our experience and from Scripture, is that God is close and he does care. He's not distant and aloof. He's not sitting up in heaven and going, oh, you know, those idiots down on earth, what are they doing now, you know? He's not doing that. He's right here with us. This is his world. He didn't sort of just wind it up and set it going and walk away. He's involved in our world, and we know that because Jesus came and became a part of our world. He intervened. He incarnated himself. He's here. He sent his Spirit to be with us. So God is here. God's here today. God's working in your life. God is working in our world. So yes, God is with us in the midst of this crisis. And the question that I pose back to people is, what do you think God might be saying in the midst of this? And that's a question I'll pose to you today to consider and think about over the next 20 minutes or so, is, are we listening to what God is saying in the midst of all that we're going through? And are we responding appropriately? So have a think about that question, and we'll come back to that a little bit later on. At the moment, we're in the middle of a series called Transforming Culture, where we recognize that the culture of our world is changing. And certainly crises like COVID-19 are a catalyst for a change in the way we think about culture. George Floyd's death in the US is probably another catalyst change crisis event that is shifting thinking in the culture of our world. But how is that culture affecting us? And how might we be the change agents in the culture that we're in? Those are the sort of questions that we're looking at in this series. And specifically today, looking at, okay, what is God saying as we respond to culture around us and we bring that influence to that culture around us? And our insights for this are coming from the book of Daniel. Daniel is a book that's set 6 centuries before Christ, so just a wee while ago now. And in this time, the situation, the context, is the Jewish people have been taken into exile by the Babylonians. So the Babylonian Empire is in modern-day Iraq, or what we would know now as modern-day Iraq. Babylon was quite close to Baghdad. Those armies then spread out around the Mediterranean world, and one of the countries that they took over was Israel. And they took many Jews, about 20 or 30,000, which was a huge amount of the population at that time, into captivity in Babylon to serve mostly as attendants and to the kings and other people in Babylon. So the Jews are now in exile. Now you might think, well, that's not so bad. They actually had quite a good life in Babylon. That is true. But the difference is they were in a very different culture. So imagine a different culture overtaking New Zealand and taking us into captivity, and then not being able to go to church like we would normally do, or hold some of the values that we would normally hold, or traditions that we'd normally have. So this is now the challenge that these Jewish people are faced with. How do we live with our culture and our beliefs and what we know to be true of God and the world around us, but we're living in a very, very different culture? And 4 people are specifically focused on in the book of Daniel. Daniel himself, who writes the book, and his 3 friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they are serving the king in the palace. And as you could appreciate, there are some significant challenges with doing that. And they face these challenges really well, as we've looked at the other week. They don't isolate themselves. They don't go, right, we'll just hide over here in a corner and hope that nothing's asked of us. No, they engage in the culture that's around them. But as they do, they don't just compromise and go along with it. They don't just go, well, I'll just go along with the worship of the Babylonian gods and eat all their food and all that sort of thing. They had to wisely think about a third way of living in the midst of a culture that's different from what they believe, but holding on to what they believe. And so last week, we looked at one of those well-known stories where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stand in defiance to the culture around them, and they get thrown into a fiery furnace. But God delivers them. God delivers them from that furnace. They don't die. And Nebuchadnezzar, the king, is so impressed. He's like going, wow, my God isn't real. Your God must be the real God. So I'll start serving him. So you start to see this Babylonian king who is leading the superpower of the day. Like, he is immensely wealthy and immensely powerful. This is the height of the Babylonian Empire. This is, history records this guy creating the Hanging Gardens of Babylon and conquering huge swaths of the Mediterranean world at the time. So he was incredibly powerful. But through that incident, he begins to honor the one true God. But unfortunately, it doesn't last for too long. As in most dictators, he's pretty full of himself and thinks that he's the bee's knees. So he kind of gets all self-centered again, and he doesn't worship God anymore. So God warns him in a dream that Daniel interprets for him that in time to come, he'll suffer a severe mental illness and lose his throne. And that's exactly what happens. Let's pick up the story in Daniel chapter 4, verse 29. 12 months later, as the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, he said, "Is not this the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty?" See, he's pretty full of himself. Even as the words were on his lips, a voice came from heaven. "This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. You will be driven away from people and will live with the wild animals. You will eat grass like the ox. 7 times will pass for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all the kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes." Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from the people and ate grass like the ox. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair grew like the feathers of an eagle and his nails like the claw of a bird. Pretty horrendous, pretty humbling experience. At the end, and then Nebuchadnezzar himself pens these words. "At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven, and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the powers of earth and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back his hand or say to him, 'What have you done?'" Verse 36, "At the same time that my sanity was restored, my honor and splendor were returned to me for the glory of my kingdom. My advisors and nobles sought me out, and I was restored to my throne and became even greater than before. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven, because everything he does is right and all his ways are just. And those who walk in pride, he is able to humble." So, Daniel chapter 4 is all about the humbling of Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar, through this terribly humbling experience, goes, "Okay, God, you're God. And now I hope and pray that you don't require a humbling experience like that to acknowledge who God is." But this is what God chose to do because of Nebuchadnezzar's pride and self-centeredness. But Nebuchadnezzar turns. He humbles himself and he does finish his life honoring God for who he is. But this is set in contrast with his son, who we read about in chapter 5. This is now 25 years later. Nebuchadnezzar has died. His kingdom is being passed on to Belshazzar, his son. And Belshazzar would have learnt from history of the kingdom to honor God, but he chooses not to. He just goes, I'm just going to do what I want to do. And so he calls all his friends around. They have this big party because, remember, they're very wealthy, very powerful. So Daniel chapter 5, verse 4, we read this. As they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. So not only are they not honoring God, they're actually making a god out of just ordinary things. Verse 5, suddenly the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall. Just a hand, not a whole person, just a hand. Near the lampstand of the royal palace, the king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale and he was so frightened that his legs became weak and his knees were knocking. It would be pretty scary. It would be, you'd be going, okay, Twilight Zone stuff here. And actually, the interesting thing about this is history. This actually happened. And still today, we refer to that event. We say things like, the writing's on the wall, right? Have you heard that phrase, the writing's on the wall? This is where it comes from, this account, 2,500 years ago. The king summoned the enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. Then he said to these wise men of Babylon, whoever reads this writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck, and he will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the writing or tell the king what it meant. So Belshazzar became even more terrified and his face grew even more pale, and the nobles were baffled. So what happens next is Daniel is called in, and Daniel interprets the writing on the wall. And he says this, but you, Belshazzar, have not, verse 22, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all that happened to Nebuchadnezzar. Instead, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. This is what the writing means. Your days of your reign have come to an end. You have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Verse 30, that very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain. And Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. And then the Medes and the Persians took over, and then the Persian Empire became the dominant power of the then known world, and then it became the Greeks under Alexander the Great, and then the Romans, and then you came to the time of Jesus. Now, when you listen to all this history, it's actually quite fascinating. You kind of go, hey, this would make a great Netflix series, wouldn't it? You know, this is quite interesting. But what is God revealing in all this? What is the point to this? And what we need to see is that God was not only humbling two kings in Babylon, he actually humbled Babylon itself. See, Babylon thought it was undefeatable. It thought it was the superpower of the day. But the Persians came in and took over. And actually, under the Persians, the Jews were allowed to return to Israel, but many didn't. Many actually chose to stay in Babylon because they had been living there for about 70 years. The next generation had grown up there. They had got good jobs. They were living quite well. And then, you know, when they were told, oh, you can go back to Israel, they went, well, Israel? Well, why would we go back to there? It's a pile of rubble, you know. So why not live here in these palatial homes? So from then on, the Jews often referred to Babylon as the place of wealth and splendor and luxury and indulgence, but a place of compromise where they couldn't really express their faith. So comfortable and luxurious, but not true to their faith and who they were. Sound familiar? And then those who went back, the small remnant that went back to Israel, were the faithful religious ones that went, let's rebuild the temple, let's, you know, rebuild our culture and our faith. So how do we relate to all this to the culture that we live in? Well, as you've probably already sort of gathered, We live in Babylon, so to speak, don't we? We live in a culture that has different values to the ones that we now hold. We live in a secular culture now in New Zealand. Now, there's some Christian heritage to our culture, yes, but on the whole, 90% of people in New Zealand are living for themselves, and they're living to just be comfortable and have enough money and have the freedoms that we enjoy here in New Zealand. They're not thinking about God. They've left God out of the picture. It's kind of like the Jews who are compromising and living in Babylon. And when you look at a crisis like COVID-19, you've got to wonder, is this kind of one of those humbling events for the world that we live in? Now, I'm not saying by this that God's created COVID-19. He's not evil. He doesn't do mean things. He's not like that. But God will use things like this to speak to us. God uses a crisis like this to reveal our need of Him and how far we've gone away from God and relied on the things that the world has to offer rather than relying on Him. And certainly COVID-19 has hit the western part of our world very hard. Europe, America, Australia, New Zealand. And, you know, it's humbled us. And I think there is a number of, there's a lot of evidence now of people being very open to, hey, there must be more to life than this. If relying on the technology and the health systems and everything that we have, and then this one little bug that we can't even see can bring us to our knees and change our lives the way it has, yeah, maybe we're not as good as we think we are. Maybe we're not as, you know, maybe our confidence isn't where it should be. And that brings us to the first point. God is revealed to our culture, to our world, that ultimately He will judge it. If you read the end of the story, you'll see this. It's interesting, in Revelation chapter 17 and 18, it refers to Babylon again as a metaphor. And it says that Babylon is kind of like a prostitute, where she delivers, she promises a lot, but delivers very little. And contrasts it to being married to Christ or the church or to God that will last forever into eternity. And then the contrast in Revelation is set up there is, which one will you choose? And it's not just a personal challenge to us, but a challenge to the nations of the world. Which one will you choose? Which way will you go on this? And I think as a nation, we have responded to the COVID-19 crisis in many ways on a practical level reasonably well. And we, you know, the number of the low cases that we are, the freedoms that we hopefully will enjoy more and more in the coming weeks is fantastic. The sad thing is I've never seen anyone in the media say, hey, let's pray into this. And that's our job, church. We can't expect secular people to pray for our nation, but we can. And we should be holding our nation in prayer. We should be holding the nations of the world in prayer at the moment. And praying that God reveals His purposes and His ways and how much we need Him, not only to individuals around us, but to the nation and to the nations. I was just talking to Johan before, and he was saying that, you know, there's quite a lot of chatter on the internet around, you know, that there could be a worldwide revival that happens from this. Well, that would be fantastic. That many people, millions of people, see their need for God. Because we do have to be very clear that God is sovereign over the nations of the world. He is watching what is going on. And He will use crises like this to humble us to the point where we recognize our need for Him again. So at a nationwide level, what the book of Daniel tells us is that we have to be humble as a nation before God. The second thing we learn from these chapters in Daniel is that God will use us to share his purposes with those around us. And I don't know about you, but I wouldn't have wanted to be Daniel in this circumstance. Like, yeah, okay, he had got kind of used to this deal now because he had served under King Nebuchadnezzar and had to challenge him. But challenging Belshazzar, and it would have been, you know, really scary. These kings would have just gone, off with your head, you know. Like, these guys had nothing about, you know, no qualms about taking you out really quickly. And so Daniel had to have this courage to say, mate, your time's up. This is it. It's not about, I'm not going to lose my life, but you are. You know, that would have been a courageous thing to say. But God had placed Daniel at that place and at that time for that purpose. Here's my question for you. Where has God placed you at this time and for what purpose? Because there will be opportunities all around you. I was talking to Rosanna Smith this week and I was saying, you know, how's the bookshop going? You sort of opening up again and things like that. And she was saying, it's amazing how many Bibles have been sold in the last few weeks. More than they've ever sold before. It's interesting, eh? She says it's like, you know, it's like Christmas. It's like, you know, in terms of, you know, spending on. She said, not other books, just the Bible. That's interesting, eh? More people are reading the Bible. Talking to someone else at home group this week, and they are saying that their neighbor was talking about the Bible. And they made the comment, the neighbors made the comment that, oh, well, but hey, you can't believe all these stories in the Bible, like maybe Daniel. You know? But this is actually history. This is actually what happened. And she knew at that point that she could either just sort of let it go and go, oh, yeah, okay. Or she could go, no, hang on a minute. This is true. This is what God has revealed. This is how God has worked. The Bible is an account of how God has revealed himself and how he's worked through people in history. That's what these stories are about. And so she plucked up the courage and shared that with her neighbor. That's great. That is so good. Those are the opportunities that God creates in times of crisis like this. And there will be people around you that are asking some of these questions at the moment. What is going on in our world? What is this all about? And be prepared to answer that question with, well, maybe we need to rely on God more than we thought. Not just the scientists, not just the politicians. Maybe it's time to reassess your need for God. So there's a global application where we need to humble ourselves as a nation before God. There's the opportunities that God will bring our way and use us to bring about those opportunities. But the one I want to finish on today and focus on is this. Are you humble before God? Don't be like Nebuchadnezzar, where it took a very dramatic, humbling and horrible experience to humble him. Don't be like Belshazzar, who in his pride just went, no, I've got this. It's all good. I'm self-sufficient. I've got all the money and everything that I need. I'm fine. I'll live my life my way. I'm all good without God. Thank you very much. You know, in James it says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Don't be proud today. Be humble. What does that look like? It's as simple as this. It's as simple as saying, God, I haven't got life altogether. I trust that you're my creator. You're the one that made me. You're the one that has a purpose for my life. And so I'm going to trust you with my life rather than me. And even if you've made that decision and become a Christian or you are a follower of Christ, you humbly follow God, are you still coming to God every day with that humble attitude, that listening, responsive attitude of going, God, what are you saying to me today? I need you today. Or are you just going about your life and doing your own thing and just seeking God when things go bad? See, Daniel gave us an example of a man who followed God every day of his life, where humbly he came before God and said, God, I submit to you today, I honor you today, and I want to be used by you today. So Daniel outlasts four kings of Babylon. He isn't affected by these humbling experiences. He's the prophet sent by God to speak into that. Let's be like Daniel. Let's not be like Nebuchadnezzar or Belshazzar. Let's be humble before our God. Let's seek him at the moment and go, God, what are you saying to me at the moment? Do I need to reconnect in my relationship with you? Maybe that's for some of you here today, you know, you've experienced lockdown and you just kind of drifted away from God for that time, but you need to reconnect with him. You need to humbly come before God and hear from him again. When was the last time God really spoke to you? Maybe if you humble yourself before him today, you'll hear his voice clearly again.
Thanks for listening to this week's message. To learn more about our church, visit c3chch.org.